Deutsche Welle. Living Planet.
From DW Studios in Bonn, this is Living Planet. I'm Charlotte Lomas. Coming up on today's show, Rwanda's mountain gorillas were once headed for extinction. Their numbers are now slowly recovering, but are humans helping or hindering?
The humans have been the main threat for gorillas in the past, but now is the best hope for their future. We have to be there.
Widespread illegal logging threatens the Congo Basin rainforest and the people who depend on it for their livelihoods.
People come here to fell the trees. The loggers don't care that we have been depending on these forests for centuries.
Plus, the dark side of the flower industry that no one's talking about. That's coming up. Stay tuned. But first, we turn to the Volcanoes National Park in northwest Rwanda, where civil war, deforestation, disease and poaching nearly drove the mighty mountain gorilla into extinction. Thanks to conservation efforts and ecotourism, gorilla numbers are now on the rise again. Nevertheless, these animals remain listed as critically endangered on the IUCN Red List, and humans remain their greatest threat. Or are they? As DW's Eva de Vries found out on a recent trip to Rwanda, humans just might be the mountain gorilla's only hope for survival.
In the town of Musanze, south of the green, lush Volcanoes National Park, it's hard not to get caught up in a gorilla fever. There are hotels with names like Gorilla View Lodge and Villa Gorilla, and there seems to be a gorilla statue at just about every turn. The numerous cafes cater to the endless stream of tourists that flock here before they embark on the famous so-called gorilla treks. The mountain gorillas of the Volcanoes National Park attract thousands of visitors per year. The Volcanoes National Park sits between the Virunga National Park in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and the Mkahinga Gorilla National Park in Uganda. Together with Uganda's windy, impenetrable forests, these four parks constitute the last remaining mountain gorilla habitats in the world. About 20 kilometers north of Musanze lies the headquarters of the Volcanoes National Park in northwestern Rwanda, the starting point for gorilla trekking tours. On the horizon, steep rocky volcanoes tower over green plantations and quiet villages. Veronica Vecellio is program manager at the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund, a research institute dedicated to saving the endangered mountain gorilla. She explains that some of the gorilla groups are being visited by their researchers every day to observe their health, location and sexual reproduction.
You can connect to them by understanding their action. Just being so similar to humans, they have facial expressions, body postures that make them much more understandable than any other animal.
But the mountain gorilla's habitats have been lost to civil war, deforestation and agriculture. And as a result, their population has dwindled. Gorilla trophies have long been popular among poachers, and their rare meat fetched a high price on the black market. Researchers say that, in the late 1970s, there were only around 250 mountain gorillas left in the wild. The species was thought to be headed for extinction. Fortunately, the work of the Diane Fossey Fund and other organizations have helped recover their numbers.
We have 480 gorillas, mountain gorillas, in the Virunga Massif and other 400 in Bwindi Forest. So we have 880 mountain gorillas divided into these two populations that they cannot cross because they are geographically separated by human settlements. These 880 gorillas were counted in 2010 and 2011, so the last census is done in the Virunga and in Buindi.
But despite the fact that the population is increasing, mountain gorillas are still vulnerable because there are so few of them left.
The threats for gorillas that are induced to human we can somehow control, but what is induced by nature we cannot. So like the poaching, that even if it's that is decreasing here in Rwanda, so it's controlled, there are anti-poaching patrol, but still exist. The humans have been the main threats for gorillas in the past, but now is the best hope for their future. We have to be there.
The World Wildlife Fund says gorillas are at risk of contracting diseases as a result of frequent interaction with humans. Climate change and habitat destruction are also persistent threats. Prosper Wungeli is the manager of the Volcanoes National Park. He's responsible for minimizing human impacts both in and around the park, and says that it's important to involve often locals and entire communities in their conservation efforts.
Especially communities are participating, they are benefiting, they benefit from what they do themselves, like potters, like handcraft makers, but also tour operators, ecology. So you can see the benefit of the tourism at national level, national economy, but also locally. The communities are very, very strategic partners of the park.
Partnering with organizations like the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund, Wengeli and his team educate people on potentially gorilla-harming practices. And that includes tourists. Those who venture on gorilla tracks need to follow strict guidelines for their own safety and for the conservation of the gorillas.
Ensuring, protection, regular monitoring of groups, law enforcement, engaging local communities, clear education, awareness approach, ensuring that the communities benefit from our conservation effort, but also on the other hand, that the communities help us and participate in kind of improving, doing better protection, especially law enforcement.
A growing interest in the majestic creatures has indeed helped boost conservation efforts. But Uwengeli says it's still important to control the number of visitors. Towards this goal, the Rwandan government recently doubled the price of gorilla tracking permits from $750 to $1,500 per person. According to Uwengeli, this move illustrates Rwanda's attitude towards tourism. Higher prices mean fewer tourists, but more money towards conservation.
Reducing the pressure on the mountain gorillas, but also addressing long-term challenges, supporting communities, increasing because the tourism revenue sharing has increased from 5% to 10% of park revenues.
The results of the latest mountain gorilla census conducted in 2016 will be announced later this month or next month. An exciting moment for Uwengeli, Fichelio and their colleagues, who've been working tirelessly to save these animals. But are the gorillas faring as well as they hope?
We are positive and optimistic of an increase because we saw by monitoring the habituated gorillas that they are doing very well. So we expect that for the entire park there is an increase. We don't know how much this number will be, but we are highly optimistic.
Eva de Vries, DW, Musanze, Rwanda.
Been out before the monkey.
13 marks Mother's Day here in Germany and in many parts of the world. Just like Valentine's Day, Mother's Day is often celebrated by giving flowers to a loved one. But did you know that many of the flowers sold here in Germany and around the world actually come from Africa? The flower industry has been praised as providing a big boost to the East African economies. But while giving someone flowers is regarded as a kind, thoughtful gesture, there's also a dark side to this ritual, as Andrew Wasiki has been finding out. He visited Lake Naivasha in Kenya to learn more about the environmental cost of flower giving.
The biggest part of Kenya's flower industry is here, along the shores of the fresh Lake Naivasha. The lake is located in the Great Rift Valley. Today, Kenya is among the world's top cut flower exporters, and most of the flowers I can see growing here will be shipped to Europe and the Americas. According to the CEO of Kenya Flower Council, Clement Tulezi, flower sales account for 100 billion Kenya shillings. That's about $1 billion annually. They provide about 75% of the country's turnover. But consumers might not be aware of how this business is having a negative impact on the lives of thousands of Kenyans, mainly because of allegations of environmental damage. Here at the lake, fishers went about their business oblivious to the potential dangers environmentalists say they are being exposed to. But recently, water levels have been diminishing and dead fish float in the water that is left all lie rotting on the newly exposed mudbanks. Local people are now starting to point their fingers at the thousands of flower farms located on the shores of Lake Naivasha. They believe the pesticides and chemicals discharged by the farms are running off the land and poisoning the lake. Desmond Ogutu is just one among hundreds of fishers and business people who make a living from Lake Naivasha.
At the moment, we have no means of earning a living. We cannot feed our children.
Ben Musundi is a local resident who was at the lake with his family. He goes even further.
We are poisoning the people in Naivasha, and we are killing their lives in the water.
Representatives from the flower farms, though, deny these allegations. John Oss is the general manager for Osirian Flower Farms.
The water that's going into the lake that's being run off from this farm is cleaner than the water that's coming out of the lake, which means that the problem is not on the flower farms per se. The problem is coming in from a failed sewage system.
Ornithologist Don Turner disagrees with Oss and has been watching the lake for many years.
I think I first came here in 61 or 62, and it was the most remarkable sight. Lake Naivasha was the greatest waterbird spectacle in East Africa. But sadly, as I say, a series of human errors, the lake has declined. I've seen it happen in my lifetime. I never thought I would. I don't think the government should have allowed the horticulture industry to site itself along the shore of this lake. It's very badly polluted. In fact, it's toxic.
Tekla Mutia is an environmental scientist and has been studying the lake and found dead fish with high quantities of lead, copper and cadmium present.
The most striking result was that in fish mussels, lead was 100 times higher than what is recommended for consumption. Lead is an active ingredient of agrochemicals, which are quite dominant in use as pesticides around the flower farms.
Musia Mwinzi from the National Environment Management Authority described the condition that the dead fish were found in.
They were actually having their mouths open, their gills, all their gills and their fins open, indicating they were struggling to breathe. They died mostly from suffocation.
But from wherever the problem is emanating, Jane Ngige, who was formerly the CEO of the Kenya Flower Council, thinks that something needs to be done.
It is not very objective to just say the flower industries are not involved or are involved. It has been depressing, and our markets are particularly concerned about even did such a problem did emanate from the farms, then how are we dealing with it?
For now, there are no direct measures in place, but scientists have warned that frying and eating fish from the lake could lead to a myriad of diseases associated with chemical poisoning. The government began a probe to investigate the fish deaths last year, but no results have yet been forthcoming. It says that it is working with the Kenya Flower Council and the local flower farmers to ensure that the lake remains clean and pollution-free for the future. But local residents remain skeptical about their progress. As I leave Lake Naivasha, it is evident that the place is still heavily polluted. Only time will tell if things will change.
Through the corridors of sleep, past shadows dark and deep, my mind dances and leaps in confusion. I don't know what is real, I can't touch what I feel, and I hide behind the shield of my illusion. So I'll continue to pretend my life will never end. And flowers never bend with the rainfall.
The mirror on my wall casts an image dark and small, but I'm not sure at all it's my reflection. I'm blinded by the light of God and truth and right, and I wander in the night without direction.
So I'll continue to pretend my life will never end, and flowers never bend with the rainfall.
The Congo Basin spans 6 countries in West Central Africa and is home to one of the most important tropical rainforests in the world. Not only is it a vital carbon sink that could help slow global warming, it also supports thousands of species of tropical plants and endangered wildlife like mountain gorillas and forest elephants. And then there are the 75 million people who rely on the forest to survive. But widespread illegal logging and unsustainable practices are threatening to destroy the massive wilderness area. DW's Ngala Killian Chimpton reports from Yaounde, Cameroon.
A group of kids play football in a dusty courtyard in Lomi, a forest locality in Cameroon's southeast. They appear carefree and happy as they chase the ball, their delight belying the anguish tormenting their 85-year-old grandfather, Vincent Ngola. In his early days as a kid, Ngola says he lived in the thick of the equatorial forest, the second largest in the world after the Amazon. They would hunt here and gather food, but now it's not so easy. He says he's seen the dynamics change.
All we see these days are chainsaws felling down trees and trucks transporting logs. We don't know where they are taking our forest to. This forest is a whole pharmacy for us. When you are sick, you just go into the forest and harvest some tree barks and leaves and roots, and you boil them and drink, and the sickness goes. Now, getting that medicine has become very difficult.
Ngola watches the kids play. He says all he sees is a bleak future for them.
People come here to fell the trees. The loggers don't care that we have been depending on these forests for centuries. As the trees leave the forest, the animals that we used to hunt for our food also leave. Even important species like the Moabi tree, which we cut down and harvest oil from. And what do they leave us with? Polluted streams that kill the fish. We are left with virtually nothing to live on.
Songs of desperation and protest are common amongst Cameroon's Baka peoples, considered the original inhabitants of the Congo Basin forest. These locals depend on the area for their livelihoods, food, water, and shelter.
As forest exploiters settle in, uncertainty about the future becomes the daily staple of the forest peoples. Every night, trucks laden with logs negotiate hundreds of kilometers of bumpy earth routes headed to the port in Douala, Cameroon's commercial capital, where the wood, some of it logged illegally, is shipped to foreign markets. While unauthorized individuals and companies are generally blamed for illegal logging, even registered companies frequently go beyond the prescribed boundaries to log and then cover their tracks by dragging the logs into authorized areas. And in the face of weak law enforcement, many get away with it. According to the Cameroon Ministry of Forestry and Wildlife, 40% of Cameroon's wood is logged illegally. Samuel Ngifo, the Secretary General of the environmental NGO, the Center for Environment and Development, says the problem has reached crisis proportions.
Illegal logging is still an important issue in this country because we still have a lot of companies, small and big, involved in illegal operations, activities in the forestry sector not complying with the legislation. Some companies go to the forest and start logging without going through the process for acquiring logging rights. Or they harvest timber that the government did not give them the right to harvest. Or they stay for a longer period of time on a concession far beyond the time deadline that they were supposed to respect.
And so the forest is shrinking. According to Global Forest Watch, an online forest monitoring platform, Cameroon lost 657,000 hectares of forest between 2001 and 2014. And Samuel Ngifo says the situation is getting worse.
We also have a lot of companies exploiting timber that they were not supposed to exploit. So at the end of the day, illegal logging is still a major issue in this country. And for the past, 15 years, what we have seen is an increase in illegal logging because the companies are more and more clever in hiding their illegal activities.
He says the phenomenon is driven by several factors, including rising demand for tropical timber in Europe and Asia. He says the very lucrative practice represents a third of the value of legal logging. The huge financial value involved also means that corruption has engulfed the sector, says Nigerian forestry expert Lawanu Mohammed of the African Forest Forum.
Some people say that forestry sector is the most corrupt in the continent. There are several countries that have a lot of forestry resources, but these forest resources are seriously exploited. And if you look at the contribution of forestry sector in national accountancy is very low, very, very low than what is taken out of the forest. The foresters who are responsible of protecting the resources, sustainably managing it for the present and future generations, are just working for themselves. They are not working for the country, for the national economy to benefit from it, and then for the larger population to benefit from these resources that God has given to the country.
Samuel Ngifo says even when those in charge of checking the excesses are willing, their capacity is limited. It's not just because of the lack of personnel and inadequate equipment, but also because the culprits are protected by the authorities.
Some of the people involved in illegal operations are, I will say, very well protected, either locally or nationally, either because they are very big companies considered as being very big investors that deserve kind of protection, or because they are people with very good official protection, in the sense that even if their activities are known, it will be very hard for a government official to go against them. The last reason is sometimes because the government lacks the capacities. There are places where illegal operations are going on, but they just can't move quickly enough to seize the illegal timber.
The result, Ngifo says, is the increasing loss of forest cover and biodiversity, and it is a situation that has complicated forest management.
Illegal logging means the forest cover will be disappearing much more quickly, but it also means those in charge of planning forest management will not be able to be efficient, because you know places where you have allocated logging rights and you expect the forest cover to be reduced in those places because of logging. But you also know the places where you have not allocated logging rights and you expect the forest cover to be intact in those places. But illegal logging is happening there and the forest cover is also disappearing there. So you can't plan anymore. You don't know what is happening to your forest. And this is a disaster, because for the biodiversity, for the local livelihoods, but also for the climate, it's terrible.
A 2015 report by the Central African Forest Commission found the Congo Basin forests represent about 25% of the total carbon stored in tropical forests worldwide. It therefore constitutes a significant carbon sink, once described by Cameroon's president Paul Biya as the lungs of the earth. The countries in the Congo Basin region have been working hard to keep the illegal exploiters at bay, says the Inspector General in the Cameroon Ministry of Forestry and Wildlife, Vincent Ndangang Awa. Defaulting companies, he said, could be suspended or their licenses seized.
In terms of concrete measures, we do repression. We bring them to book, we write offense statements and send them to court, and then we go out to do investigations, because the population around the forestry areas also do a lot of denouncements. They bring to our knowledge defaulters that are trying to hide and seek, and so we go down to the field and we do investigations. The anti-corruption unit is there to see what role corruption is playing to promote illegality in the forestry and wildlife sector.
Still, the people who rely on the forest, like grandfather Vincent Ngola, say these measures pale in the face of the vested interests in the logging industry. They fear the damage to the vast basin and its unique biodiversity will be irreversible. Ngala Kilian Chimtom, GW Yaounde, Cameroon.
That wraps up our show for this week. Our program today was produced with the help of sound engineer Christophe Groover. You can listen to Living Planet anytime on iTunes or SoundCloud, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at DW Environment. I'm Charlotte Lomas. Bye for now.